Chapter 10. Cereal Bubbles and Foreign Debt Holders. American Embarrassment and Asian Opportunity. Decades of relentless urgings to borrow more and spend more, from the onslaught of junk mail credit card pitches to the devotion of whole magazines to goods rather than words, have turned Americans into voracious consuming machines. In 1981, Americans saved a net 8.5% of national income, according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis, and as recently as 1998, the figure was 6.5%. By 2003, the net savings rate had fallen to just 1.2%. Daniel Gross, The New York Times, 2004. Perhaps the crucial difference between then, Britain in 1914, and now, is that Britain was a net exporter of capital, while the United States today is the opposite. For the United States has used its dominance of the international bond market not to export capital, which in net terms it did until around 1972, but to import it. Neil Ferguson, Cash Nexus, 2000. Persistent newspaper headlines about debt are innately worrisome. Their frequent appearances during the 1920s, 1930s, 1980s, and 1990s proved to be unhappy auguries. The tensions of the first decade of the 21st century, partly new, lay in the combination of American domestic credit excess and vulnerable international status. The world's biggest debtor had also become its largest ongoing borrower. A risky pairing. The U.S. consumer, taking on record levels of debt and debt service and working record hours, sometimes holding two jobs, was hailed in 2003 and 2004 as the wheelhorse of the world economy, the global buyer of last resort. This dubious privilege was an unexpected outcome of the post-September 11th mobilization. The world economy is leveraged to the U.S. consumer, reported CNN, and the U.S. economy is leveraged to the hilt. U.S. consumer spending accounts for around 70% of U.S. gross domestic product. Indeed, consumer credit and mortgage debt are both a higher percentage of disposable income now than they've ever been before. For households watching their disposable income shrink, their new international locomotive status was a small consolation. Because imported goods constituted a high percentage of those consumed by Americans, the several measurements of the U.S. trade deficits kept setting new highs. Export firms and central banks in China, Japan, Taiwan, and Korea accumulated so many dollars in payment that U.S. stock markets trembled at rumors that this or that Asian central bank might be selling greenbacks for other currencies. Economists in Tokyo and Beijing, all too aware of their nation's huge stakes, kept as close a watch as did dollar overseers in Washington. Like debt headlines, currency weakness is rarely a good sign. Britain, as a fading hegemon, had been troubled by sterling pressures and crises during the 1920s, 1930s, and 1940s, when the pound was yielding its global role to the dollar. Now the same shoe was pinching the American foot. As U.S. wage income fell, American households pushed their debt and consumption levels to new heights. The U.S. current account deficit, our thermometer of global imbalance, kept rising as a share of GDP. 5% in 2003, 5.7% in 2004, and an estimated 6.5% in 2005. Asian central bankers, however, thought it generally wise to hold the dollars earned from selling popular products in the United States and reinvest many of them in American Treasury debt, thereby loaning those funds back to the United States government. The Chinese and Japanese could sell so much in America partly because the United States made fewer and fewer of the manufactured goods that its citizens wanted or needed. Neither export-focused nation wanted Washington to impose tariffs or quotas on their products. Ordinary Americans took in the large, bold-faced debt headlines, the ones about extravagant credit card fees, bubbling housing prices and mortgage loans, and the pivotal role being assumed by China, but absorbed relatively little of the technical explanation behind them. Press reporting on the debt didn't make it any easier. John and Jane Q. Public could not keep up with shifting domestic and international debt measurements, arcane definitions, and coded reports. Even experts winced at fathoming the latest wrinkles in credit derivatives, exotic mortgage instruments, and Beijing monetary policy. Besides, to grasp what the new debt levels threatened, worriers first had to find out how much indebtedness there actually was and what it represented. This involved considerable subjectivity. Moreover, any serious tabulation required going beyond just the sovereign or national debt that had monopolized discussion of Dutch vulnerability in 1715 or British peril in 1919. The fiscal jeopardy of the 21st century United States was more complex. End of Disc 12.